President Biden's first face-to-face meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin has wrapped up in Geneva. The two leaders spoke for the better part of 2 hours and agreed to resume arms control talks and to return ambassadors to each other's capitals after they were withdrawn earlier this year. Speaking to reporters after the talks, President Biden says there's no substitute for doing this face-to-face.
It was important to meet in person so there can be no mistake about or misrepresentations about what I wanted to communicate. I did what I came to do.
The president says they had a frank discussion about cyber attacks on critical infrastructure, among other topics. Paul Rosenzweig is with the GW School of Law and a senior fellow at the R Street Institute. He tells us his initial impressions of this summit.
It certainly struck me as though this meeting had low expectations and it met those low expectations. This was a get acquainted meeting, perhaps to set a standard for discourse going forward, and for President Biden in particular to try and draw a line in the sand and change the nature of the discussion from that which had gone before in the previous administration.
You are particularly focused on cybersecurity and these ransomware attacks. Any sense of whether they will back off a little bit on some of those based on what the president told Putin, which is, how would you feel if your oil fields and your oil sector were hit? I took that as a little bit of an iron fist in a velvet glove kind of thing, but maybe I'm misinterpreting.
I took that as a bit of a veiled deterrence effort as well. On the other hand, in his press availability immediately afterwards, when he was asked about the Colonial Pipeline ransomware, his response as translated was something like, what does Russia have to do with that? And so the challenge is going to be for President Biden to find levers to persuade Putin to take the problem seriously and to exercise the authority, which we're certain he has, put clamps down on this ransomware. I didn't see much beyond that one veiled threat, but I think that what this signifies is that the U.S. government is going to have to develop a basket of responses and start trotting them out if it's going to get Putin's attention.
You are also arguing that Putin is providing safe haven for criminals, making it almost impossible for the U.S. and the West to get at them. What, if anything, can be changed there? How do you go at that problem?
Well, again, I think the effort is to put pressure on Putin to change his response. There are obviously non-cyber ways one could do that, from economic sanctions to diplomatic campaigns and the like. In the cyber realm, I would probably be an advocate for technical means of increasingly isolating Russia's network from the rest of the internet and changing their ability to move readily around the network. That involves changing some protocols, but it could be done. In some way, you have to convince Putin that we view this seriously. And so far, we haven't responded very much, if at all, in a way that would give him that impression.
If we know anything about the Russian leader, it's that if he finds something to be in his best interest, I don't think he would hesitate for a second to throw some of these hackers that are residing and working in his nation in prison. I mean, you know, he would do that at the drop of a hat if somehow he were convinced that it's good for him.
I think that's right. That's why some things like economic sanctions and threatening the oil pipeline that's very important to Russia might be better plays than direct cyber interventions. I have sometimes jokingly said that the only way that Putin will really change his mind is if we find his secret Swiss bank account and put a ransomware lock on that.
What is another major takeaway that you have?
I think the other thing that we need to think about is taking the profit out of ransomware by eliminating the ability of ransomware criminals to collect payments in cryptocurrency that gives them the anonymity to act behind the veil. If we can't convince Putin to give them up to us, we have to make it not profitable for them to conduct ransomware attacks. And that means preventing them from receiving payments in anonymous currency that they can then convert into dollars and rubles. That is also a big challenge.
What about convincing our CEOs stateside not to pay the ransom?
Well, it would be nice to convince them to do so, but even though I don't want them to, I don't blame them. Their economic incentive is misaligned with our security incentive. Our national security incentive is to stop payments to ransomware. Their economic incentive is to get back up and running as quickly and as cheaply as possible. We could criminalize payments for sure. That, I think, would just drive them underground. I think people, if it's in their interest, would pay them anyway. It's morally wrong to make it a crime to keep your business alive, I think. All of this is tied to a much larger gap in America's thinking about our general strategy for improving cybersecurity, not just against ransomware attacks, but against all forms of vulnerability, exfiltrations of data, industrial control systems attacks that would take an electric grid offline. President Biden has made a good start at taking that problem much more seriously and much more to heart. He's got some very able nominees pending who will, I hope, hit the ground running. And then perhaps in 6 months, we can have this discussion and assess whether or not they've been able to do anything.
Paul Rosenzweig with the GW School of Law, senior fellow at the R Street Institute. He joined us on Skype.